This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi. Truth in engineering.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian. He's worked at Golf Channel, PGA Tour Network. He's now got the number one podcast in the game of golf, The Peter Kessler Show. It's available at revolutiongolf.com. Always a pleasure to welcome my friend Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hello, Peter.
How's the greatest voice in the whole business?
You know, one day, I don't know how we settle that debate because you have the greatest voice in the business.
I don't know. When I hear yours, I think anything that he wants to do or anywhere he wants to go is going to be terrific because it'll sound good no matter what.
When we play golf, I just want to hear you say, that's good. That's what
I just don't want to say it too often.
Give me your thoughts. We're a week removed from the PGA, most exciting major of the year. What'd you think?
Well, I just can't get past the McIlroy performance. I know he only won by a shot, but, you know, that's almost a statistic anomaly because he had a two-shot lead with one hole to play, and if they'd all taken their time, he would have scored whatever he needed to have scored. But I just thought what he did in terms of dominating the field, really even statistically, is really startling. For example, you know, per round, he gained 4.1 strokes on the field. And of those 4.1 strokes, 1.4 came from driving, 1.4 came from approach shots. He had a positive in short game, positive in putting. And his play was so incredible that outside of 100 yards for the week, he gained 3 strokes on his competitors. He was so good from outside 100 yards, 3 strokes per competitor against his competitors per round, and he was hit 75% of the fairways while hitting it 30 yards longer on average than the rest of the field. I mean, startling numbers, and he shoots 32 on the back nine on Sunday when the field average was 36 and the other guys were shooting 36 that he was trying to catch.
How good can he be? And maybe more importantly, Peter, how good does he have to be?
Well, gosh, if he just plays like this, that'll certainly be good enough. He does so many things so well, and I just love his golf swing. I heard the other day that he gained, and he said this, 6.5 pounds of muscle in the last 8 weeks. Now, I know he looked particularly ripped at the PGA, but 6.5 pounds of muscle is really incredible in a couple of months span. If Tiger did that, everybody would be screaming steroids or PEDs or something. But I think he's got game. I like his game better than I like Fowler's game. He's longer. He's stronger. I think he's better under pressure. I think he really showed he was great under pressure. I mean, yes, there was some luck involved in the 3-wood he hit from almost 300 yards to the par 5 10th that nobody else hit that day, and he made eagle on the hole. You know, from that point forward, he still made 2 birdies and the rest pars, and he hit every green. I mean, that's the sign of a closer. That's a very Nicklaus-like thing. That's a very Tiger-like thing in his prime when he used to hit most of the greens and putting wasn't a big deal. And that's the other thing. Putting's not a big deal. He, you know, he one or two putts and goes on to the next hole, and he's very sound from inside of 10 feet. And he was terrific, you know, from every distance this last week. He didn't lead the field, but it was certainly competent. And he gained on the field, you know, a partial bit of a stroke, actually a stroke a day on the field in his putting alone. So when you do everything well, and I'll never forget the sight on the 16th hole when everything was tied up and he was 334 yards down the fairway after a boomer on 16 and Mickelson standing on the green with a 10-footer for par going, man, the guy's got pitching wedge into this green and I may not make a par here. I mean, it was a really startling moment, and it really stuck out as he hit it as hard as he could and he hit it right down the middle of the fairway as far as anybody'd hit it all week when it mattered the most, and that's what the great ones do. I think he's got greatness potential.
Talking about the end of the tournament, an odd and unusual ending. Tell me your thoughts about how it all wrapped up.
What a mess that was. I can't believe. I mean, if I would have thought, had I been either Rory or his caddy, I would have said, forget it, standing on the 18th tee. It's almost dark. It took us 71 holes to build a two-shot lead. Now they're going to stand on the side, and then we're going to hit, and we don't know what they're going to make, and we don't know what we need to make, and it's getting dark. What if we can't see the hole from 5 feet? I mean, there were so many reasons to not play on. I'm guessing that if he gets the chance to talk about this, he'll say, I should have waited until the morning. I know the crowd would have hated it, would have been bad for TV, but the smart play after 71 holes and a two-shot lead is, I wait. And the other thing is they were out of their rhythm because they waited all day, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden they're not going to wait. You know, it's one thing if you're in the rhythm of not waiting and if you're in the rhythm of waiting. So there was a rush factor there. And then the fact that he hit driver reminded me of Vandeveld hitting the two iron and the driver off the tee at Carnoustie. I thought it was a wildly extreme decision and something he didn't need to do. And if he'd had more time to think about it, I think he would have put 3 wood up the left side and hit an iron on the green and said, thank you very much, in the morning.
We are talking with Peter Kessler, host of the Peter Kessler Show at RevolutionGolf.com. I thought Phil was very cautious with his comments after the round, but I don't think he was happy with how it wrapped up.
Well, he wasn't happy for a couple of reasons, and the really important one was the way that he played coming down the stretch. I mean, you know, he had the lead in the golf tournament, and, you know, he ends up playing, you know, the birdie on 18 didn't end up mattering at all. So just setting that aside at this point, you know, he played the holes after number 10 in even par, you know, when Rory played him 4 under, and, you know, he had to make a long putt on 12 for par. Rory hit all the greens on the back nine. He missed a 10-footer for par on 16 because he missed the fairway and he missed the green. I thought his comment afterward about that part of it was very telling for Phil Mickelson because it sort of sounded like something he would say, which was, well, you know, I was really hoping I was going to play good on the last 5 or 6 holes, and, you know, I really thought I would be competitive. And I'm thinking, you had the lead in the golf tournament. You were hoping to play good the last 5 or 6. It wasn't like he was 3 behind and needed 4. He was there. At one point, he led the golf tournament, and then all of a sudden, he didn't lead the golf tournament. And so I think he was more upset about that the last hole didn't matter. And he knew that letting him go through or play up or whatever it turns out to be, that didn't matter either because there was a two-shot lead. Now, I'm sure he was thinking, wow, when McIlroy hit that wild drive that almost went in the water and all of a sudden could have been a bogey and yeah. Phil could have made birdie and we could have had a tie. So, but I thought Mickelson was more upset about his play than he was about the mess on 18. But he had a reason to be a little upset on 18. He should have had the right to finish the hole like other people ahead of him were finishing the hole.
You know, golfers always look for the positive in their rounds and in their years. And Ricky Fowler played very well in all 4 of the majors his first year under Harmon. He didn't win anything, and he hasn't won much. But I would like to think he's taking positive thoughts away from this year.
Well, I think in the first 2 majors, you know, even though he finished top 5, he was many strokes back of the winner, you know, because just the way the things played out. And, you know, so then when you get to the Open Championship, you know, he was many strokes back with 1 round to play and did shoot 4 under on the back 9 and 5 under for the day, which got him into second place. But he didn't finish well at Augusta and he didn't finish well at the U.S. Open in terms of the final 9 on the final day. So those top 5s are a little misleading. I thought this was one where he was really, truly in the middle of the fray. The others were just statistical. I played great, but, you know, I wasn't really going to win. This time he had a chance to do it, and this time he had a 3-shot lead over McIlroy. You know, when McIlroy's standing in the middle of the 10th fairway and Fowler's just holed a nice birdie putt on 10, you know, and then the thing, you know, should have been in his control to some degree because he had control because he had the lead no matter what McIlroy did on 10. He still had the lead of 1 shot, and he let it get away away by not playing a good back nine, so I'm not sure he's a closer. I thought he looked very nervous on the few holes that he was nervous. I thought he just looked like he was, too. He was out of his rhythm. It remains to be seen if he can close as opposed to being a Jim Furyk type who's always really competitive but doesn't seem to close relative to the number of the times that he has a chance to.
But as the kids say, he's trending favorably.
Oh, yeah, I think he's a wonderful player. Don't misunderstand. I just don't want us to overstate what he did at the majors. Yeah. It was wonderful consistency. And consistency is the hardest thing to do in golf, which is what made Tiger so great, was he was consistent. He was always in contention. He didn't have two good weeks a year like Phil. And Ricky Fowler's having lots of good weeks. And lots of good weeks means that, you know, the winner's circle is going to yield to him. I think we'll find him to be a closer, but it's one of those things where he's still kind of learning how to do this as opposed to Rory, who's figured out how to do this. But I think that he's on a spectacular trend, and I hope that he can go the next notch and not just be somebody who's a top tenner, and we'll see.
Well, okay. Well, earlier this week we got word that Tiger was taking himself out of Ryder Cup consideration and sitting down at least until his event in December. Personally, I'm happy to see this. I don't think he should have ever come back. Give me your thoughts.
It just makes me nervous when he says things like, and I have to get back into the gym, and I have to get stronger, and I have to become more explosive. I can't believe there isn't somebody who doesn't sit him down and say, you're going to yoga with the 20-year-old girls, and you're going to go every day, and you're going to go to the 80-minute class, and that's all you're going to do. And he would be absolutely fine. All of this bulking up and this continued insistence, even after all of these bad things, the surgery, and then, you know, and then other perhaps unrelated back problems, you would think that at some point he would get over the gym thing and not think he has to compare himself to athletes in other sports so they can have something to talk about, like how many reps did you do. He's got to get past that. So I think that's huge for him to come out of denial and do the things that he really ought to do. And it makes me wonder if he listens to anybody. You would think he's getting good advice, but it doesn't sound like he's getting good advice or listening to that good advice. I think that his decision to sit out was forced. He can't play golf. He couldn't play last week. Everything hurts. You know, he played terrible at the Open Championship, his worst finish. So, you know, there was no basis upon which to think that he should continue playing right now. He's obviously hurt, and he's in bad form to boot, not because just he's in bad form, because he hasn't played golf. Even though when he's off, everybody, you know, he's off more than everybody, like Phil a little bit, but worse. I mean, there was a time when everybody who played golf professionally would have said, I will take Tiger Woods' swing as my own for sure, for sure. Everybody who played professional golf in the year 2000 would have traded their swing. Now, there isn't anybody who plays golf for a living who would trade their swing for his. Nobody, from everybody to absolutely nobody. So I think the layoff is forced because it's going to take him a while to recover. Hope he goes to the recovery program. He had no choice but to call Tom Watson. If he had let this linger knowing that he, you know, wasn't going to play, and I think everybody knew he wasn't going to be able to play or at least be in good form, and you're only one, you know, you're one of 12 players. You're an important part of the team. It's almost 10%, you know, of the points are attributable to each guy. So he knew he couldn't do that. So I'm delighted that he picked up the phone, and he did it early enough that he didn't let the press continue to linger over this thing and for this thing continue to heat up.
Ryder Cup, talking about the Ryder Cup, Tom Watson seems to have his work cut out for him now. Tiger will not be on the team, and rightfully so. And of course, Dustin is not out on tour, and a couple of other players injured. Give me your thoughts on what Tom's going to do.
I think he's going to pick 10, 11, and 12. Is that Ryan Moore, Keegan Bradley, and is it Brendan Todd is the third one?
I think so.
I'm not mistaken. So, you know, why wouldn't you just pick the next three? It makes it so easy for him. The only one is the Brendan Todd thing where you would think, okay, maybe I'll trade him in for somebody else. But he got to where he is because he played some consistent golf. You know, Keegan, I think, is a no-brainer. Ryan Moore, because he's in one of those three spots, I think becomes a no-brainer. And I don't think you reach down and take Brant Snedeker, which everybody seems to think is the right move. He hasn't played good enough. He's like 25th on the list or something. I mean, you know, and that's what everybody everybody's talking about now that the Tiger thing is out of the equation. I think some people are saying, you know, Ryan Moore may be a given, Keegan Bradley a very given, and other people are saying Snedz. I would just go with the next guy on the list. Nobody else has justified, you know, a pick from down the list because he's played great in the last few weeks. Now, that said, he's still got a few weeks to go. So I think he'll have an easy decision ultimately, and I think the thing will sort itself out where he'll feel comfortable on 10 through 12, unless Snedeker does something to move him to 13th or 14th, that kind of thing. Snedeker's got to help himself. I don't think Watson's going to pick him otherwise. So, and it's not like a star-studded cast from 13 to 20. It's not like somebody stands out and you go, aha, obviously this is my guy. There are no obviouslys, this is my guy. There's very few really terrific players, and those terrific players are on the team. There's nobody of whom you would say, wow, it's a shame that. You know, everybody who should be there is pretty much there. So I think he's getting what he ought to get. The only thing he's not going to get is Tiger. He can pick anybody he wants to go with the team he's got now, which is the best American players are on the team. And, you know, in the business about how things stack up on paper is so nonsensical because, you know, Bob Jones said it so well. Anything can happen over 18 holes. Over 36 holes in a match, the best player is going to win because the luck's going to even out and all the crazy stuff's going to even out and the best player is going to win. And that's generally been true in all 36 hole matches of any kind ever, ever, ever. I mean, Jones played in seven finals in the U.S. amateur over an eight-year period, won five of those at 36 holes, lost one at 36 in the final, and lost in the first round at Pebble in 1929, which some say spurred him on to win the Grand Slam in 1930, but never mind. I think the 18-hole match thing, it's whoever's hot that moment. Reminds me of Paul Azinger with the whole pod theory. Mm-hmm. With 90 minutes to go, the thing was up in the air, and then the U.S. putted lights out. It's nothing to do with pods. It has something to do with putters.
We're talking with Peter Kessler, host of the Peter Kessler Show at RevolutionGolf.com. While I have you, a couple of other things quickly. Over the last couple of weeks, the Dustin Johnson story broke. Tell me, do you think the tour ought to be more forthcoming when it comes to fines, suspensions, why a player is suspended?
You know, the popular sentiment is that they have a responsibility to go ahead and tell us everything that's going on. I don't really think that they have to. I don't mind that this stuff is kept quiet generally. I don't think we need to know the exact details of the whole Dustin thing. Did he fail the test, but before they had a chance to tell him he failed the test, he said, I'm going to take time off, so therefore it's not a suspension. You know, that's seems like that's what's happened as the more you get what appear to be the facts of the situation. So, you know, he was going to be kicked off for 6 months. I don't think they have a responsibility to tell everybody everything, and I don't think that there's that many things to tell. The guys don't take PEDs. If they would help, they would take them, but there isn't anything that I've ever heard of any player mention that could be helpful to them in playing better golf. So it just comes down to hopefully recreational drugs, you know, smoking weed and hoping it's not your turn to get drug tested. But the stuff that he got, you know, tested for, the cocaine as we understand it, that gets out of your system, as I understand it, really, really, really quickly, unless you're doing a lot of it. So he would have either been, you know, doing it on a Saturday night and got tested on Monday, or, you know, there was something serious going on, which people have been talking about mm-hmm. for quite some time, that something serious going on. I don't know anything in particular, just what I've heard.
FedEx Cup playoffs getting underway. What are we, 6, 7, 8 years into these things? Do they work? Do you like them? Does it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter today because we just came off of the PGA. I mean, you know, once you finish that fourth major, it is really a letdown. And, you know, and then instantly they come back with a long form point accumulation playoff tournament thing, which determines basically the money list at the end of the year. I mean, it's all that's really about. So, you know, I know it's because people like it more and more every year. You know, that's for sure. It has traction in that I think it has a bigger audience. But I think that's because a lot of the good players show up and they play at some interesting golf courses, and they're going to play at East Lake, of course, in your backyard. So, you know, the courses, and there's a little bit of prestige to it. But, boy, I don't think people are looking forward to it this minute. I think everybody's still on a high from what we've seen here. Maybe a transitioning of the guard is taking place from Tiger to Rory. I think we saw some pretty compelling evidence the last few weeks. So people are really jacked up about what he's done and the promise of a dominating player, which is the most important thing for golf, is to have no, you cannot have parity and have a successful tour in terms of popularity extending between beyond the hardcore golfers. You must have a dominant player. You can even have three like Jack and Arnie and Gary Player, but you must not have parity. And if Rory wasn't playing like he was, we'd have parity and no Tiger, and that's boring, and then nobody looks forward to the FedEx playoffs. But now it'll be interesting because Rory's going to show up. We're going to see some more of him. He's going to take an interest. So this thing will get propped up, but it needs a few days before it can start to, you know, get some life breathed into it.
He is Peter Kessler, host of the Peter Kessler Show at RevolutionGolf.com. I always appreciate the time, Peter. Thank you for this.
Oh, it's great to be with you, my friend. You're the best.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, now I'll stop.